the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL wire site for the Arizona Cardinals, with my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. This is episode 469. It is our first show of week five as we look back at the Cardinals' 35-16 loss to the San Francisco 49ers. Seth, if only they could have just Zach Ertz catch that passer, or Zach Pascal catch that pass, we have a perfect cover. And I look smart on my I go 3-0 on my underdog picks. I hit on the Cardinals cover. They kick the extra point. Prater goes over his 4.5. We make a little bit of money. The Cardinals get close. Yeah, it would have been a good day, right?
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting because if you look at the end of the first half and then the third quarter, the Cardinals played really well. Almost, you know, you don't want to overstate it, but almost to an equal point of the San Francisco 49ers. But I mean, let's be honest, you and I talked about it. We knew that this was going to be an extremely tough game for the Cardinals. And one of the things I said after the Giants loss, and it's, you know, 100% holds true, especially going into this game and then coming out of this game, is that as good as your X's and O's can be, those Jimmy and Joes, those are the guys that execute the plan. And, you know, the Cardinals just didn't have those guys. I mean, even the bulk numbers that we'll talk about look really good at times, but there was just not enough efficiency, and there was just not enough plays being made in clutch times. Not even just talking about the, you know, end of the game, like you talked about, where they could have just made it look a little better. There were key plays during the game that just didn't get made, that allowed this to be more lopsided than it probably was, where the Cardinals were never going to upset the 49ers at any point. Even when they got it to 21-16, the 49ers were always in control. But I think you and I both agree that they could have finished it a little stronger than they did.
Yeah, if we want to talk about right now, is what were we most disappointed about? I wasn't disappointed in the loss because I didn't think that the Cardinals really had a chance of winning. I'm personally disappointed in the lack of the late cover, but that's for purely selfish reasons. And I know that there were a lot of people who are on that side of things. You would have liked to have seen them push better late and start better. That's kind of the one thing that they've done well all year, was start really well. And they didn't do that this time. They weren't as efficient to kind of start things off. And granted, San Francisco is a completely different beast when it comes to things, because of their, you look at talent across the board. You know, they've got a competent quarterback, but they've got arguably the best running back in football. They've got one of the best pairs of receivers you will find. You've got one of the best tight ends. On their offensive line, they have arguably the best left tackle. They have elite players at all. Basically, they have elite players in the front seven, and they have good to very good players in the secondary. Like, it depends on what you feel about their safeties, Hufanga. I can't forget how to pronounce the first name, but Hufanga is really, really good. And so you look on top of that, their rookie kicker Jake Moody has been absolute nails. And so it is a team that is, in terms of depth and ability, there are no real holes. And like the one hole that you would argue they have at quarterback, Brock Purdy's playing at just such a great level. And I guess that the two things I was disappointed in is the fact that they didn't get more pressure on Purdy, and two, that they were unable to create any takeaways at all. Because as effective as they could have played, without those two things, they weren't going to have a chance. And I just, I was disappointed that it got a little bit away from them at the end of the game, and that they had, that there was no answer for Christian McCaffrey. We get that Christian McCaffrey is tough, but it was like you and I defending Christian McCaffrey out there in that game.
Yeah, like you said, it was ugly at the end, right? And that's what we were hoping to avoid or not see from this team. And it made it tough in the end because you had a lot of chances to potentially create opportunities, like you said, to make this a closer game.
They could have just kneeled down as well. They had to get that extra touchdown. Just kneel the ball down. It would have been like a minute left, and you're up by 12. You have a minute left.
We know that's not their mentality.
It's not. I'm like, could you please kneel the ball down? I'm like, again, this is why you shouldn't gamble, guys, is because you create stupid scenarios to get upset at.
100%. And that's why, it's silly. But it's also, let's be honest. How many of us are watching the end of that Cardinals 49ers game? I mean, outside of you and I.
No, we have to, because we're writing words about it.
Yeah, but who's actually watching that in that situation then? Nobody, right? They're like, oh.
And then, the alternate game that they could have watched when they flipped to it was just the absolute debacle of Dallas, New England. So
it's so funny you bring that up, and, not too big of a side, but one of my best bets of the day was a parlay, and I put Mac Jones in there. Because I figured that they would lose, but I figured it'd be competitive.
Yeah.
And they benched him halfway through the third quarter, and he only needed 25 yards. And so it was like this baffling situation where you look at it and you're like, are there only two good teams in the NFL this year? You genuinely wonder, because the Cardinals just beat the Cowboys. And then the Patriots go into Dallas and just get shellacked. Like, they don't even look like they belong on the same field.
And the Patriots are supposed to be significantly better than the Cardinals.
Right. And I know transitive properties is never the way to think about sports, but the reality is, this is a team that was supposed to be competitive, and instead they look, I don't want to say lost, right? But they look like they made a huge mistake in Mac Jones. They look, and so you just look at it and you're like, man, how did the Cardinals end up having to play in the NFC West, right? Or what is clearly going to be, again, the NFC best in terms of just the division overall in the NFC. And who knows, maybe the reality becomes the Cardinals, win over the Cowboys was a huge upset, and the Cowboys go and knock off the 49ers in week 5. But right now it just looks like, that the 49ers are so far ahead of every other team in the NFL in terms of abilities that it's just wonder where this goes. And so that's why it's hard to get overly disappointed, right? Because, we've seen them beat every team that they've played except that second game. Now that's escaping me real quick. But, they've beat everybody that they've played with relative ease. And even in that game against the Rams, it was never.
No. The only reason it looked as close as, they got the cover because Sean McVay kicked a field goal with no time left.
Right. And so,
San Francisco has been in control of every game, even the Giants game. It was a close game going into the fourth quarter, but it wasn't close. It was an 8-point game going into the fourth quarter, but it felt like they were much more ahead. It's just they've been so methodical. It's frustrating.
Even that Cardinals game, it felt like they could have, if they really wanted to, they could have scored 50, but they didn't really stress their passing game. They took efficient, but maybe that's what they are. You know, maybe they're not explosive in the way of Kansas City or Miami or Buffalo, right? Because that's asking Brock Purdy to do more than he's capable of, but they can be efficient. And I know people are going to take this way out of context, but they can be efficient and rely on a dynamic running game and a phenomenal defense a la early Tom Brady, right? Where they're not saying, you know, they're just putting the game in his hands of like, hey, don't screw this up. And, you know, I talked about that the other day. Like, people want to look at what Josh Dobbs did and be like, hey, that's a phenomenal performance. It was a very good performance, but, you know, 15 or 13 incompletions, some of them, you know, were dropped and some of them were just bad throws. And you look at it, the efficiency is what the killer is from the 49ers. And the Cardinals don't have that same efficiency. And yeah, they don't have the same talent level. Like, we all know that. But that, you know, if you put Brock Purdy in this offense, is he better than Josh Dobbs? And then on the flip side, if you put Dobbs in the Shanahan offense, yeah, he's probably not as efficient because we've talked about how good Purdy is in that mid-level range. But he's able to keep the timing of the offense, and that's kind of what you see the difference is in those type of players and things, is that when you have a guy like Purdy who's not going to make mistakes, that you have to, as you said, kind of off the air, force him to make mistakes, it's going to be tough to beat them.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, with our Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's start on the different side of the ball, the good and the bad on offense. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, with our Cardinals Talk on the Web. I want to talk about the offensive side of the ball. I wrote about this yesterday. And if you look at the offensive numbers, now they only scored 16 points. But if you go across the metrics, aside from the lack of points, you could just argue this, they should have had another touchdown at the end of the game. Zach Ertz, that's, you know, we've been joking about on Twitter in our group chat about how Dobbs hates completions down the field to Zach Ertz. You know, most of those have been because Dobbs have been off on the throws, but that one was just plain drop. That, you know, they scored 23 points against San Francisco, and you're like, yeah, that's pretty good. But look at some of the offensive numbers that they had: 362 yards, respectable. They converted on 53% of their third downs. They averaged 5.4 yards a play. They rushed for over 100 yards. They didn't turn the ball over. They were 2 of 3 in the red zone. And it's across the board, you know, Josh Dobbs had 265 passing yards. He had 2 touchdown passes. You had Hollywood and Michael Wilson both had 7 catches. Hollywood almost goes for 100. You got 3 receivers over 50 yards. Now, granted, those Zach Ertz numbers came mostly in garbage time. I think 3 of his 6 catches came in the final drive, and he should have had, you know, 7 catches for 70 yards and a touchdown, but he didn't. You know, Dobbs was good with his legs. James Conner only had 11 carries, but averaged 4.7 yards per attempt. Like, all of the offensive metrics hit where you want. And so you can't be too terribly disappointed with the offensive play. And I think overall it was basically good. Just the problem was that they punted on their first two possessions. That first quarter they got behind, you know, because they were down 7-0. So they had the punt, they could go by and had a touchdown, they punt again. Then San Francisco scores that touchdown in the second to start the second quarter, and guess what? Boom. That was basically it. If they get any points in those first two drives, I think we're talking a different football game.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those situations where they just couldn't finish early, and that created problems late. And like you said, it, you know, the being able to get to 16-21. I thought that was a good thing. I mean, but it also causes or shows the warts of the team, right? It shows the warts of, okay, they got that, you know, they got the touchdown right before half, right? A great drive by Dobbs, and they did a really nice job of just getting them into a position to be able to do that. You know, they had a couple of big plays on it. Michael Wilson just showed up huge. That touchdown, I think we both agree it was a touchdown. It was definitely closer than I wanted it to be, right, to not being a touchdown. But I think overall both of us would say it was a touchdown. But you had, I mean, it's just like little things like that where you're like, okay. And then they came out and scored to start the second half, and you're like, okay, this is a team that can fight, and that's what we knew. But then the warts showed up, and the warts being like, oh, you just don't have the guys to keep up. Like, the, you know, you look at it, the 49ers, you know, the Cardinals come out, they score, or they force a seven and out. Let's be honest, they still got 41 yards, but that 99-yard drive was that was probably the highlight of the early season, even over beating the Cowboys, because I was texting a buddy of ours, and I was like, once they got the first down, I was like, all right, now you kind of flip field positioning, and that's really all that mattered in that situation. When you really have agreed with that, like, you were just kind of like, hey, as long as they can get out to about the 30, Cooney can have a good punt, like, that's going to be huge. But no, I mean, they made plays, you know. And this is one of the plays I wanted to talk about. When you talk about Dobbs, the quarterback, and it ended up not mattering because they ended up getting the first down. But on second and eight, he throws a speed out to Marquise Brown. And in the moment, you're like, oh, why didn't Marquise Brown keep his feet and get up the field? And then you go back and watch it, and it's just a bad throw. He put it low in a way where Brown had to go down, pick it up off the ground, basically. And that momentum carried him into, falling, and he wasn't able to run after the catch. So instead it's third and one, and obviously they get it and they go on to score. So it doesn't matter, but those are just little things that you look at and you go, if they don't score, if they don't go down, like, that's something to think about and remember. Or if they didn't get the first down right there.
Well, now that was right before the Zeke Turner fake punt thing, wasn't it?
No. That, what was it? I'm looking right now. Hold on. No. That was off one of the tush pushes that they had there. Ah. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, you look at it, it was just one of those situations that they just, you know, it worked out. So it's going to get lost in the shuffle, but if he hits him in stride, that's an easy first down. And like, there's no need for that. And so it's just, it's little things like that you look at, you go, well, that's nitpicking. But yeah, that's the difference in games sometimes. You know, look at, when we talk about the Brock Purdy situation, Purdy on a speed out like that, he hits Brandon Ayuk or Debo Samuels in the numbers, and then they gain an extra 8-10 yards, and you're like, oh, why can't you cover that?
Because you can't cover that.
Right, exactly. And so it's like, oh, I shouldn't be getting mad. So yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I thought overall it was there was a lot of great, great things. And then just the reality of that and nobody really is. Philly will be, and that's why that'll be, you know, a really good, likely a really great NFC championship game. But I mean, is anybody up to keeping that San Francisco front seven, or I guess technically six, at bay all day? Like, God, those guys are good.
They are. They're really good. And you look at another positive at offense. You know, they They only had 10 offensive plays in the first quarter. They had drives of three, and they went three and out, and they had the seven. But each one of their five possessions after that were 10 plays or more. We're seeing...
And by the way, that's also the good and the bad again, right?
Yes.
You mentioned it at the beginning. You can't fall into that hole. It just can't happen. You can't only run six offensive plays. I know it's technically eight with the punts, but you can't run six offensive plays and then expect to beat or even really compete with San Francisco when they're not explosive. I don't know if they can be. Let's be honest, they haven't had to be yet.
But it's not like, but they were also explosive-ish. They weren't explosive, but they only had one drive of more than 10 yards, of more than 10 that hit double digits.
Right, but you look at, you know, their first drive, 8 plays, 62 yards, over 4 minutes. Their second drive, 9 plays, 75 yards, over 5 minutes. So in reality, the Cardinals, you know, their first two drives were 10 total plays, and they kept the ball for just around 6 minutes. The 49ers were 17 plays, and they were able to keep the ball for almost 10 minutes. And that's
scored two touchdowns.
and that exactly. But you look at it like a great drive, and I know people are going to disagree, but a great drive, even though it only resulted in a field goal, was that 13 play, 6 minute drive right after the 49ers scored their second touchdown. Because that is what you need to do. You need to give your defense a break. You need to give them a chance to recover. And then they did it again and followed it up with the 13 play drive for that touchdown. That's what they needed. They didn't necessarily need, you know, chunk scoring drives where they're throwing 80 yard bombs. But what they needed was to just limit the amount of time that the defense had to be on the field. Because let's be honest, we knew that was... We knew that was the big mismatch in the day.
Yeah. You had to love the play of Michael Wilson.
That's exciting, isn't it?
It is. It is. And the one thing is because of his career at Stanford, I'm like, when's he breaking a bone? That's the thing I keep asking myself. Like, he's going to be good, but when he's going to break a bone? Because we know it wasn't soft tissue stuff, but it was his bones that were the issue in college. Everything else across the board offensively was pretty solid. Coming up next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the Mr. of Cardinals Talk, let's talk about the defense, which wasn't as good. What was good? What was bad there? That's coming up next on Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, the Mr. of Cardinals Talk, time to talk defense, which there's no way around it. While the defense didn't play badly, they definitely were not good enough. The problems, the reason why the Cardinals lost this game had honestly nothing to do with their offense. It had to do with their defense and just absolutely being outmanned and overwhelmed by the talent of the San Francisco 49ers.
I think you and I can both agree there was a player that played really good and then a player that played well and then a bunch of guys that were okay, and or I shouldn't even say a couple of guys that were okay, and then everybody else that it just showed up that they're on, you know, second, third, fourth stringers at those positions. Dennis Gardeck continues to be fantastic.
Holy cow, the spin move he has. I don't know how. Like, one, he's got good, but we've now seen this, I think, on at least half of his sacks. Like, he sets that right tackle and then puts his back to him and turns back to inside. The right tackle doesn't have, like, once the tackle commits to the outside, Gardeck gets inside. His spin move for a guy who is limited athletically is insanely good.
Well, and you look, he followed that up a couple plays later where he beat Trent Williams with relative ease with just a speed bend pass rush. And, you know, they're never going to call holding on Williams, but, you know, Williams held him. It forced the incompletion and it got the Cardinal. I think it was the stop that they got, and it got the Cardinals off the field. And you're just like, man, this guy is small, but he is a ferocious competitive player and really fun to watch. I think Ketrell Clark played well. You know, he had obviously the unfortunate highlight of being hurdled on one of the Christian McCaffrey touchdown runs. But I think for the most part, that was a one-off situation. And for the most part, I think you and I would agree he played well. From there, I mean, Zaven Collins had some moments. Kaiser White had some moments. But for the most part, it was rough.
I thought that, well, like, there was no way. I mean, playing, like, Chris Barnes was available, but it was Zeke Turner who played. I like Zeke Turner as a player.
I was going to say, this is not a shot at Zeke Turner. It's really not, but it's just the reality of who he is in the NFL,
well, that,
right?
And who they were playing.
100%. You know, if they're playing the Bears, it's probably not a huge deal.
Well, and what we know about Zeke Turner, as talented special teams player he is, remember, he was not a linebacker coming into the NFL. He was a safety. So he was kind of a, like, as he developed, like, he moved because he was a little bit under athletic for safety. So they moved him closer to the line of scrimmage. He's really great on special teams. And he basically became, for like Vance Joseph, he became the backup Isaiah Simmons, because he could do all the things that Simmons can do, just without the same level of elite athleticism. And so if you're asking Zeke Turner to be a run stopper, you're going to have some problems. If you ask him to do more in space, you're okay. But like trying to square up Christian McCaffrey, good luck with that.
Yeah. And that's just what it became. And it was unfortunate, and, you know, it is what it is. They failed and were
on the
unable.
Defensive line. They just like, they can't.
They're just outmanned.
They're outmanned there, because you're like, clearly their three best defensive linemen were all out. Like Jonathan Ledbetter out. Hopefully he'll be back this week. But no Watkins, no Collier. They're done probably for the year. You bring in Roy Lopez. He'd been with the team a week. He's been a starter in the league. Like, that's what he did when he was in Houston. But like I mentioned on the show last week, I didn't know what a Roy Lopez was before they signed him.
Right. And, you know, again, it's not a shot at these guys. It's just the reality of who they are as players. And, you know, it's unfortunate that they're going to get lambasted because they just lack the same level of talent as their competition. And, you know, it is what it is. They struggled and they were unable to keep up with what is 100% the best team in the NFL.
So you also look at things like what you want them to be able to do. They didn't stop anybody. Like, they got huge numbers from Brandon Ayuk, 6 catches, 148 yards, 177 total yards, 4 touchdowns, Christian McCaffrey. They did nothing to Brock Purdy except for the one sack and the one pressure. It seemed like Purdy had all time. He had no problems throwing the ball. He was accurate. Only the one incompletion the entire game, showing off, you know, that elite production. So last year he completed over 80% of his intermediate passes. This year he was like at 90%, and that I'm sure went up because, I mean, he only had the one incompletion. He's been incredibly good at that middle range, and just the Cardinals had no answer for anybody. They didn't have an answer for Ayuk. They didn't have an answer for McCaffrey, and they weren't able to do anything to Brock Purdy. And so there was, and then San Francisco only had 5 third downs. That's how much the San Francisco offense just moved down the field. Like, they had, what was it, 55 offensive snaps and 5 third downs. So they were not even, and they converted 3 of those. They scored touchdowns on every single red zone trip. It was the complete opposite of what happened against Dallas. The Cardinals offered no resistance. They basically offered them minimal resistance in every phase of the game except for that very first drive in the second half, and I believe that was the drive when Gardett got the sack and then they forced the incompletion. That was those two plays were the reason why they punted once.
It is, and you know, it's interesting because, you know, I being a youth football coach and coaching our first game this weekend, one of the teams we played used a back out pass about six times in the game, and we continually told the kids, like, hey, you got to watch this, and they continually didn't. And you're like, why can you not figure this out? And then you watch it and you're like, oh, it happens in the NFL too. Never mind. I shouldn't expect 13-year-olds to be able to do it if guys that are getting paid hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, can't do it either.
I wish that he got more pressure. That was disappointing, especially.
Oh, that was super disappointing.
Like, we knew that nothing was going to happen with Trent Williams, but on the right side, I would have liked to have seen the Cardinals produce more or force more on that side. George Kittle only had the...
To be fair, he's playing like Greg Kittle right now, so... at least as a pass catcher.
I'm an old man. I know who Greg Kittle is, but...
But, you know, he's playing... He's not playing at the same level he used to as a pass catcher, but he's still such a ferocious blocker that, it's okay. And it's ironic that the Cardinals need three guys in Ertz, McBride, and Jeff Swaim to basically get what the 49ers do out of just Kittle.
Yeah. Well, he's a special player. San Francisco had eight different guys catch passes. Yeah.
And so here's my question. I want to get your feedback on it. Is it kind of weird how much they just continually use, and I don't want to say beat up because it doesn't seem like he's getting beat up, but like continually use Christian McCaffrey even when they're up by a ton? Like, isn't that weird?
Yes and no. I think Elijah Mitchell, I think basically what it is that
I know Mitchell's
Shanahan
hurt
just again. doesn't trust his back guys. And on the show with Kyle last week, he was talking about that. But being able to rely on Elijah Mitchell, otherwise, like, what's the knock on McCaffrey's durability? His production is unquestioned. But if you want him late in the season and in January, then you need to give him, you know, some rest. And I know that Mitchell's injury probably was the reason why, because Mitchell had practiced all week and then got hurt late. And
yeah, so he got a knee banged on Thursday. You know, the memes coming out of all of practices right now are pretty funny, because it's basically been like, what type of practices are all these teams running? That it's like every Wednesday and Thursday you get a bunch of notifications, and obviously this is mostly fantasy football related, but, you know, as fans of a team, this is, you know, a problem. And you look at it and you're like, Marquise Brown thumb, you know, who was it this week? Juwan Jennings had a shoulder. Elijah Mitchell had a knee. You're like, what is going on in practice?
Paris Johnson tweaked an ankle on Friday.
Right. And then played fairly well for the most part.
Yeah, that was promising. So, yeah, coming up next on the Rest of Spirit podcast, Best Served Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's move forward and look ahead now to this week. We're not going to talk, but there's been some roster moves made. The Cardinals have gone through the first four games. What's coming next? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Spencer Cardinals Talk on the web. The Cardinals made three moves on Monday. When you hear this show, I'll try to get up early Wednesday so that it's before practice and before any notifications about what roster moves the Cardinals made. But they released three players. They released L. Manning, one of the offensive linemen that they had picked up off waivers. They released Christian Mathieu, cornerback last year, was a seventh-round pick. And then they also released Chris Boyd, special teams guy who got in a little bit of a skirmish, and I'm wondering if it's related to that. But
that is a fun question to ask, right?
Yeah, but those particular moves portend things that could be happening this week, because injured reserve, that Cardinals have four players who are eligible to return to practice this week. You've got Kyler Murray on PUP. You've got rookie Garrett Williams on NFI, both recovering a torn ACLs. Williams suffered his last October playing for Syracuse. He has yet to practice, period, with the Cardinals since being drafted.
By the way, can I make a real quick statement on that? All right, so the irony, and I know I'm going to irritate people with this, the irony that people are like, oh, yeah, he's just, Garrett Williams tore his ACL. They got to let him get healthy, versus the weird kind of vitriol of, why isn't Kyler Murray ready yet? Like, is he not going to play this year? It's like, wait, this dude tore his ACL almost two full months before Kyler and is basically in the same spot, if not slightly behind Kyler.
Which is weird because, like, when he was drafted, the timeline, he expected to be fully cleared by July. So I don't know if it was just long playing him because they knew he was not going to get the offseason program. It's been nearly a full year. It's been, we're October. Yeah, basically a full year. And he's still there.
And by the way, as somebody that's blown their ACL, like, I know for a fact they all take different times to recover. That's just the reality of the injury. Some people, and now, by the way, when I blew mine, it was still archaic. I think they still, were just taking cadavers out of dead animals on the side of the road to replace them. it's not just a simple like, oh, okay, you're ready to go. And like, every body heals in a different way. And so, that was always the thing. It's like, it's gonna be interesting to see how it all plays out. But I think for the most part that we'll see what happens from here. But yeah, you got Garrett Williams, you've got obviously Kyler, and so we'll see kind of who comes in. You have to assume that
we've got Dennis Daly, who injured his ankle in the preseason finale. He was placed on IR after making the active roster.
Do you think he's going to replace Elijah at this point? Because Elijah's clearly been their worst offensive lineman.
It's a possibility, but obviously you've got to get Daly at practice first. And then Myjai Sanders, who fractured his hand at the beginning of training camp. We haven't seen him do anything at all. He's eligible to be returned to practice. That's going to be it. So of those four guys, they made three roster moves. Now, the Chris Boyd one might have simply been a reaction to his penalty and near fighting. That might have been, being a border guy on the roster. Christian Mathieu, though, and Nell Manning, they to me kind of feel like they're clearing a spot for a cornerback and an offensive lineman. I think we can probably guess that Daly's coming back, who was initially kind of one of the team's seven trusted offensive linemen. Tristan Colon apparently has reached that status. Daly coming back makes sense. Garrett Williams coming back makes sense because you had Starling Thomas.
They desperately need corners also.
They need corners. You've got Starling Thomas at the back of the roster who's yet to be active, but they didn't cut him. And he can do kind of what Chris Boyd does. He kind of had a little niche in Detroit when he was there on special teams, so he could fill in that spot. But if you need, like, Christian Mathieu, that's a body. So are either they're going to bring up Quavion White, sign a veteran cornerback, Or maybe it's time, and maybe they're ready for the rookie to come back in Williams. Myjai probably is ready to come back. I just don't know what in the world are they going to do with an eighth outside linebacker.
Yeah, that's a fun question right now. So we'll see how that all works out, because I don't know if there is a sheet or anything to follow in this case, because it is a new group. Because their defense is clearly an issue in a lot of places. Like, how are they going to go about filling this roster out? Because, you know, they've got some questions that they've got to answer along that, along the line or along the defensive side of the ball now, especially after this last 2 weeks, even though they got away with it against the Cowboys, you know, they got to figure things out now because they've got some, you know, winnable, probably maybe a strong word, but they've got a, some games that they should compete in even better over the next 5 weeks.
Yeah. Kyler Murray, the report from ESPN's Adam Schefter was that Kyler is not going to be activated from PUP and that he is still considered weeks away from playing. I'm going to mince words here. I never suggested that he was going to come off PUP this week. However, he could be designated for return.
Yeah, and that would, you know, that would
match, and to say that he's weeks away would still mean he's going to miss, that he could be back in week six. I don't know if that's the case. I'm thinking probably now weeks seven or eight might be the more reasonable timetable. But, like, would they open the – you get a three-week practice window. You open the practice window for 3 weeks, and then you've got to do something within those 3 weeks. I wonder how many of those actions will be taken. Now, you get to designate to return eight players. So at this point, we've got four that could happen to, which they're kind of in place to do. Are they going to do that right away? You know that they want to do that with Buddha as well, so he would be number five. But all four of these guys feel like guys that they would want to designate to return as well. So keep an eye on that. My guess is Daly, Myjai, maybe Garrett Williams, probably, and at least Daly will be active, like he'll be designated to return and activated this week as well. Maybe that will be the case. I just don't know what to make of that, the cornerback situation, because now you just cut two guys, and now you've got only four cornerbacks on the roster, period. Because you've got Clark, Wilson, Hamilton, and Thomas, who we've never seen. So adding a cornerback makes sense. Garrett Williams makes sense. Because Williams would probably be inactive, right? Because then you just bring up, well, they were having five. They were five having five cornerbacks active on game days. I don't know what to think about that.
I think you're right. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they fill this out. But we're hopefully getting closer to seeing more of what we were hoping in terms of talent on the field this year.
Yeah. Question. Do you think maybe we saw just limited, very amounts, small amounts of it. Do you think that they might move Cam Thomas inside for a larger role there because of the injuries they've been dealt with?
I mean, obviously he can't play the role that a guy like Post Watkins or LJ Collier played, but you know, I think they want to utilize him in that way, and that could, you know, unlock him a little more.
Well, then it would give you the ability to play time.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say in terms of playing time.
Well, yeah. So, roster moves are coming. We'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk of the Web. We will record later in the week previewing the Bengals game, which feels like it could be a winnable game. And then as well, I hope to have a Bengals guest as well later in the week. So with that, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jesser. This is Rise Up Sierra Podcast. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back in a couple days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sierra Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red.
Red!